I'm going to talk about biological evolution and algorithms. And let's see. Species have a pretty interesting property. If you look at, you know, when Linnaeus started going around organizing all the species in the world, he found that you could divide them up into these big categories like animals, plants, and then later on people found bacteria and various other big groupings. And inside each of those groups, there were smaller categories that were also mutually exclusive, so different phyla, and so on and so forth. It gets successively refined. And the interesting thing about species is that you pretty much always, once you have enough information, know that some animal belongs in one part of this categorization and not in another. It's not as if there are animals running around that are half primate, half insect, except in the movies. And so this differs from almost anything else that we ever try to organize, right? If we try to organize a library, we might stick the history books one place, and the biography books another place, and so on and so forth, and there'll be lots and lots of books that, they could go in one place in this category, or they could go another place. That's why we need cross-references and all kinds of things like that. So species have a pretty special property that they can be organized in these trees that you've all seen in your biology books. And this is a very big hint to Darwin that evolution was going on, that we were descending from common ancestors, because other explanations for how we arose wouldn't really give rise to a tree-like explanation, you know, unless God were being extremely careful to organize us in a tree. So, traditionally, how did one build the tree? You have a bunch of species, and you want to build a tree out of them, so you have maybe bats, spiders, monkeys, and flies. And what people used to do is they'd look at these big morphological features or some other feature that you could measure of these various, in this case, animals. And you'd say, well, you know, bats have hair, and spiders don't, and monkeys do, and flies don't, and so on and so forth. The spine, let's see, bats have wings, spiders and monkeys don't, except perhaps in the Wizard of Oz. And flies do, and placentas, so on and so forth. So you come up with this categorization. Now, it's pretty rare, if we're evolving from common ancestors, it's sort of hard to think of how, well, this group of animals over here would all of a sudden develop a having a backbone as a you know, adaptive feature, and this other group of animals over here would figure that out or evolve that way. And so, gee, if we just ignore wings, we get a tree where we have bats and monkeys together. The bat groups everybody that has hair and placentas and spines, and over here we have spiders and flies, but that group of that don't have hair, don't have spines, we don't have placentas. So, of course, we have this big problem with wings. Insects have wings, and some mammals have wings, and birds have wings. So that's an example of convergent evolution. The actual structure of the wing is different enough so that we can figure out that that evolved several different times. Well, then came recombinant DNA technology, and people figured out a different way to go through. Well, each species has a bunch of DNA, and what is coded in our DNA determines whether we have hair, or whether we have a spine, or, you know, just what kind of animal or plant or organism we're going to be, and changes in the DNA cause changes in the species, or in particular cause changes in the individual. And so, the DNA is changing all the time, and we're passing on DNA to our children that are somewhat changed, and so over time, changes accumulate in the DNA. So, if species have a very recent common ancestor, they have less time, they've had less time since we had the same DNA as another species. So, for example, humans and chimps have a fairly recent common ancestor, and the DNA just hasn't had very much time to change from the time when humans and chimps were the same species. Humans and chimps have more than 99% of their DNA identical. And so similarity in DNA means you're closer to three. So sort of the pre-mid-70s view with similarity in morphology than closeness in trees, and then when people figured out how to sequence DNA, they started building trees out of DNA. So in fact, there's a lot hidden in this one statement, but if we look at how similar the DNA is between two species, we can estimate how much time has gone on since that DNA diverged from a common ancestor. Of course, you can also get into lots of trouble. I don't know if any of you followed the whole African Eve fiasco, where people tried to estimate within human populations how long ago since all humans diverged from a common ancestor by estimating each of the things from their DNA. And various different groups placed our Eve, the mother of us all, in Africa, and someone else put her in New Guinea, and this is a fairly tricky business. Suppose we had the evolutionary distance, and I'm not putting units on here because it's a completely contrived example, but suppose we measure that from bats to spiders there are 16, million years or tens of millions of years, whatever it is, since they evolved from the same species, and so on and so forth. We can fill in this table of all the pairwise ones, and obviously I only need to fill in half of the table because the stuff down here is just symmetrical with the stuff up there. Then there is a tree, conveniently enough, that exactly fits this data. There is this tree here where the distance from bats to monkeys is 4. And the distance from spiders to flies is 10, and the distance from either of these guys, either of those guys, is 16. Okay? So here is a very special case where you can fit a tree so that all of the evolutionary distances are exactly satisfied. So that's what you'd like to do. If you had somebody really telling you, this is how many years ago it was since these two species split off from a common ancestor, then you could do this. But of course, life is never that good. And so we never know anything exactly. And let me just put this up so you can hear the numbers. We're trying to get estimates for times, and estimates, full of noise for all kinds of different reasons. So we get approximately the right distance here. So I just sort of added a little bit of noise to this matrix and got this one. You can play with these numbers for a while and convince yourself that there is no tree. No matter how you put the numbers, and no matter how you try different shapes of the tree, there is no tree that will fit these numbers. So what do? You have some estimates. You want to find a tree that fits the numbers. And so there's this big problem of fitting the tree to some set of numbers that don't exactly fit a tree. And there are lots of methodological problems there that computer scientists, including me, are quite involved in. But I don't really want to talk too much about how you do that, in fact, how you do that at all. One question you may be asking yourself is, so this tree exists, right? These species did evolve from common ancestors. Why do we care? What do we want it for? What good does it do us? Well, when I'm not talking to the NSF, I can say curiosity is a pretty good reason. We just want to know. But of course, when I'm talking to the NSF or groups, other groups, I can say drug discovery, technology transfer, industry. So, what is building these trees has to do with drug discovery. So, if we understand, we've been talking so far about how species are related to each other. There's a bat over here and a monkey over there. But we can build these trees through genes, little pieces of the DNA. And if we understand how one gene is related to another gene, but suppose we have a drug that affects the product of some gene. Genes produce protein, and drugs fiddle with protein. So, I have a drug that affects the product of some gene. And I know some other genes from building the tree that are pretty similar to it. Well, now I could try taking my drug and modifying it a little bit and see if it will affect related genes. And that will be much more efficient than just sort of grinding up grapes for us and grinding up a human being and making a big cross product and see which parts of the rainforest do nasty things to proteins and which part of the human being. Okay, but let's see. So knowing this tree is helpful, I'm claiming without very good support, knowing this tree is helpful for finding drugs that can affect other genes. So once we've built the tree, aren't we done? Right, there's one tree, right? So we build it, and then we use it, we publish it in a great big paper, or we put it on the web, and then we're done, and why do we need to keep on building trees? Well, the interesting thing is that even though there is one tree for the species, each gene can have a different tree. After all, we as animals are only vehicles for carrying around DNA, and if we're good at carrying around DNA, then DNA tolerates our existence, and if we happen to be bad at carrying DNA, then we get squashed like bugs. So, I'll give you a little toy example. And this toy example is very similar, it's very related to some work that I'm doing with the group at Johnson & Johnson, and therefore these are called A and A prime rather than the specific genes that we're looking at. So you start out a long time ago with a piece of DNA and it has some gene A. And the interesting thing is the DNA gets changed in lots of ways. And one thing that can happen to DNA is that it can get duplicated. So this piece A, just the whole thing gets duplicated and stuck somewhere else in the DNA, and now you have another copy of it A prime. Now, they're going to start, changes in A aren't going to be the same as changes in A prime. They're going to start having mutations independently. Okay, so here we have a speciation event. One branch of the species leads to a new species. The other branch leads to another species. Okay, so now this A is going to start evolving from that A, and that A is going to start evolving from that A, and this A prime is going to do the same thing over here and over there. And now we have another speciation event, so now we have four species that each have their copy of the A, that each have their copy of the A prime. But notice, all of the A's are more related to each other because here's their common ancestor. And all of the A primes are more related to each other because there's their common ancestor than they are to, so the A's and the A primes are more related to each other than they are one to the other. I'm not, I think that was vague, but maybe the next slide will clarify it. So here's the toy example of what happens. Okay. Oh, the other thing I forgot to point out is that you not only get duplication, sometimes you just turn off a piece of DNA. You had a gene there, you just shut it off, it doesn't work anymore. There are little pieces of hemoglobin sitting around in our DNA that doesn't work anymore. They're called cryptogenes. So here I just said, well, A prime gets turned off, maybe A prime gets turned off there, and A gets turned off there, and monkeys want to have both A and A prime for reasons of their own. So now suppose we want to build a gene of these five things. gene-free of these five things. Well, let's see. Here it is. All of the A's form their own tree, and the A primes form their own tree, and the common ancestor of all the A's and the A primes is way back here when we had the duplication event. So there you have it. Here we have monkeys and flies seem to be related to each other if we look over here, but then, it all depends on whether you're looking at a gene or the species, because obviously monkeys can't be over here in the tree and over here, so we're building trees on a gene, and it is obviously not the same tree as the species tree. So that you can get more information by building a new tree out of each gene. So things cannot get much more complicated. In biology, they always do. Ockham's razor, the principle that the simplest explanation always is the best one, is guaranteed to be false in biology. There's the most complicated explanation is always the right one. Okay, I haven't really talked very much about what computer scientists have to do with any of this, because it gets pretty difficult to talk about what computer scientists have to do with any of this, but there are these various steps like estimating evolutionary distances, tree fitting, and there are a lot of computational issues in gene trees versus species trees that are very computationally expensive. And if you don't have clever ways of doing it, it can take a very long time to build these trees on a computer. In fact, the amount of time that you can devote to building these trees is bounded by your grant cycle. You obviously have more time than your next grant. So that means you have to figure out clever ways to build these trees, and that's where I come in and various other computer scientists. And with that, I'd like to end.